Taoiseach, first of all, anyway, you're very welcome to the Kingdom and you're very welcome to Radio Kerry, but you're not a stranger to the Kingdom, are you?
No, I'm not. It's a privilege to be on your radio show, Uisce. I've been coming down to Kerry for many years. Obviously, there's been a very long tradition. We can talk about that again. But since Finola, my wife, is from out the road in Kilcommon, we've been coming down here for 20 years and we use Kilcommon as the base every August for a three-week holiday, and it's a wonderful county to come to because every place you go, there's something to cater for all the people's needs, whether it's walking, outdoor, indoor, golf, fishing, mountain climbing, or whether you want to relax and have a pint, plenty of places to go to in Kerry.
Now, last Saturday, you were after a very busy weekend since you've come to Kerry, and you're based in Killarney at the moment. Last Saturday, you did the Ring of Kerry charity cycle, 126 miles. There was thousands did it. First of all, congratulations on doing it. You did it as you were Taoiseach, but you also did it last year when you weren't Taoiseach. Do you think that that's a good example? It is a great example. Would you do it in the line of, say, listen, this is the way we should be living, we should be fitter, we should keep ourselves fitter, and you're a very fit man. The importance of obesity and health in the country in relation to sport?
Well, sure, it's critical for the future. I used to do a bit of cycling myself, and now I was never a member of a cycling club. But because the old knees are a bit loose from the football kicks and belts up our country over the years, I always found that on the bicycle there's neither weight on your ankles, your knees, or your hips, so it's always a way of moving around. And besides, I love the freedom of being out in the fresh air, the breeze and the sun, more so than the wind and the rain. But Jimmy Dinahan actually asked me to do the cycle last year. He said he was going to do it for his first time, and would I do it with him? So we did it last year. And I think 3,500 to 4,000 did it on that occasion. And I signed on last year to do it this year. And I have to say, I hope it's a demonstration of leadership of a kind, if you like, that while we can do these things, we should do them. My compliments really are to all of the people who competed, especially those who took a very long time to do it, but in particular for the charities that they raise money for. Now, it was very well marshalled, very well organised. I had Chief Super Pat O'Sullivan along with me on the bike. He's a fabulous cyclist. And Pascal Sheehy of RTE, who's another fabulous cyclist. And both Jimmy Dinahan and Minister Kieran Cannon from Galway cycled with me as well. So the friends you meet, the acquaintances that you make, over the next 12 months I'm going to meet many of those people in different parts of the country who will say, I saw you on the Ring of Kerry. And like, to be honest with you, when you go out over Coombe Kishta there and look at the Atlantic Ocean on a fine day, sure God, it would do anybody's heart good. But besides that, in terms of people having more leisure time, the gear is cool, the bicycles have all changed, obesity and health consciousness is a thing with people, and this goes on all over the country in one form or another. So I was very happy to be a member of the citizenry who cycled from Killarney right around to Killarney, and it's with a sense of achievement you actually do that.
But for the busiest man in the country, how did you get time? Did you do a bit of training? I mean, for the likes of other people who have sedentary lives now, and they say, I haven't time for this and time for that. But still in all, you can come along with your very, very busy schedule, and do you do a bit of training for it, or how do you prepare?
I certainly hadn't done the kind of training that I would like to have done. What I tried to do this year was to get 4 or 5 Sunday mornings, 6:30 in the morning, and maybe do 25, 30 miles at home out over some of the hills and get that into your legs. It's like anything else. If you're a swimmer or a footballer or a walker or whatever it is, once the memory is in the old legs, they'll work away, but you have to practice it. And in that sense, while I didn't have as much done as I would like to have done, the day was great. The crowd pull you along, and the energy coming off all of those cyclists is a great feeling. But for me, like, it's the charities that they raise the money for, that's where it's all channeled into. And besides, anybody that you meet would say, God, isn't it great to have been able to cycle the Ring of Kerry? It's an achievement for
126 miles, Taoiseach. And staying with that in the example that people set, the cycle was started by two great Killarney people, two friends of mine, Peggy Looney and John Coffey. Both of them are gone, they're 90. and they are still to be seen cycling around Killarney and down around the National Park on a permanent basis. Two great people. So they are also setting an example for other people, aren't they?
Well, absolutely, and long may they continue to do so. To have the health and the ability and the air of magna, as I say, the clarity of mind to be able to do these things is wonderful, and I support that completely. Maybe I met them on the little pathway down from Muckross to Dynas. I don't know where they actually cycle in the National Park. But they're role models, you know, from a very different era when people didn't have the luxuries that they have now. I mean, the bicycles and the gear ratios and the way things are today, as the young people say, is so cool. But it's I find across the country, Uisce, to be honest with you, that there's a huge voluntary movement out there now, beyond any individual kind of sporting organisation. That's a movement for people who understand that the body they have is the only one they'll ever have, and that they have one life to live, and that they should keep that engine, as it were, in pretty good shape for their well-being, for their personality, for the work that they have to do. And it's a symbol of our country. So we don't want to have a kind of a perception of being an obese, overweight, sedentary. That's not the way we ever were as an island nation from the time people were knee-high, either dependent upon the sea or upon emigration. Irish people know how to work and know how to compete. And in a modern sense, in 2011, I think when you see all the movements across the country, it's a statement that I'm very happy to be associated with. And I hope it's a kind of a demonstration, if you like, of don't just talk about it, go and do it.
We're sitting down here, Taoiseach, in the Killarney Park Hotel, and we're looking back and we're talking about things. Anytime I see you, you're never talking about sport. You're always talking about world matters or Irish matters or every kind of a matter. And so today you took an opportunity to talk about sport. Maybe people would like to see more type of those interviews with Colin, the top politicians, talking about what we're discussing. Would the message go out more to the country? Do you know where I kept coming from?
I do, and sure, politicians are only the same as everybody else, except that they have a mandate from the people who elect them to do a particular job. And obviously government is focused on the bigger issues of getting the fundamentals of the country right. But in your person, you may have an interest in sport, you may not have an interest in sport. But for me, I've always been interested in it. Obviously, as a child, I was reared in a sporting household. We'd be outdoor types by nature. And I hope that I've kind of give that sort of interest to my own children as well. And I think they've got that. And that's something that we love to talk about it. But obviously, in the political sphere, people expect you to focus, you know, almost constantly on what the politics of the day are and what the issues of government are that have to be dealt with. And that's a constant evolving argument. But then one can have an interest in sport, be it cycling, be it football, be it hurling, be it basketball or whatever. And as a young fellow, I was an avid follower of all the sports from the Olympics down. Had a keen interest and still have in seeing what's happening in the world of sport, and that's changed too with the money that's involved on a professional scale, as against where we are now with our own national games here, which are still thankfully amateur in that sense.
When your name often comes up in relation to GA, people say, "Oh, his father won an All Ireland with Mayo in 1936," but he did way more than that. Your father won 7 national leagues with Mayo. Mm-hmm. Captained him to one, won 3 Railway Cups and won an All-Ireland in 1936. Micheál Amanna Hartig was chatting me about this yesterday. He might have been in the opening of the Fitzgerald Stadium with Mayo in 1936, but your dad, Micheál Amanna Hartig reckons he was one of the great midfielders in the GAA.
He was of his generation. My dad played for St. Gerald's College in Castlebar, which was a small day school. He was born in Castlebar. He went to the training college in Waterford in De La Salle, and there he played midfield for the college with Sean Brosnan, who later played for Kerry, was a brilliant midfielder, represented Cork as a Fianna Fáil TD for many years afterwards. But his great rival of those years was Paddy Kennedy, and whom I met on a number of occasions, and I know his son Brian well in Dublin. But that Mayo team actually went 53 games without defeat. So also threw in a few Sigerson Cup finals in there. So like, from that point of view, when they won their first All-Ireland, these were the stuff of legend, of course. So you were reared in that kind of a, in that kind of a, an environment in the 50s and the 60s, when there weren't all the other diversions of the mobile phones and the other activities of sport that have, that are now commonplace. So football was the, what was the issue, and in those times, my father taught out in Derevoriada in recess in Connemara. And used to have to cycle to Castlebar, which was 65 or 70 miles, for the matches at the weekend. And you got your telegram saying, look, you've been selected, be fit and be ready. So there were no hedge shrinkers or no dietitians or whatever else. You had to do your own thing, you know, different style of football, I know. But of his generation, he would have been one of the best midfielders in the country.
And still, they only won one All-Ireland Taoiseach in that era, and they were on top. How was that now? Did he ever speak to you about that? Should they have won more?
They should have won more, and there were a couple of occasions where they could have won more. One of those famous semi-finals, they had a 14-yard free playing against Kerry, and the umpire came out and said to the referee, like, if you want to make your way home, you better do something about this, and there was a free out.
Some things never change.
Some things never change in Gaelic football. And well, he didn't talk too much about it. That was obviously a topic of discussion. Yeah. Mentioned, I think, in the late Raymond Smith's book about the football immortals, the chapter on that Mayo 36 squad is in there. So things never change. Win at all costs.
Staying with Mayo football, one of the greats of Mayo football, Paddy Prendergast, who's a living in Kilkerry now, one of our favourite Mayo men known here now, was a great fullback and a very genuine fella and a lovely man, and a resident in Kerry now for a long time.
Well, he's a legend and an institution and somebody whom I greatly admire, because he has an infectious enthusiasm for Irishness in Gaelic football, and God love him, he's in Tralee for 50 years and he's putting up with the ribbon from the Kerry fellas all the time. And of course the old story was that the 50-51 team would never win another, that Mayo would never win another All-Ireland until they were all gone, because of the curse put on them down in Bohola. But Paddy Prendergast was an outstanding character, as I say, infectious enthusiasm. You couldn't but like him. And of his era, was a legend at full back, and of course played with the Mayo 50-51 squad. And here we are in 2011, and we still haven't managed to put a squad together that it can actually win it. We were within a couple of minutes on a few occasions in the 90s, 96 and 97 indeed, against Kerry, when Maurice Fitzgerald got those two fabulous points left and right, both sidelines over the bar, and it was two of the most brilliant points I've ever seen. So to get the combination together, which Kerry have always had been able to do regularly, with skill, power, tradition, and all the rest of it, and as Michael O'Connell used to say, you'll never win unless you can put the ball over the bar. So we still live in hope. I hope I see it before I end my own term.
Now, you were at the Munster final yesterday. You sat in the Dr. Eamon O'Sullivan stand. And what did you think of the game?
I thought the occasion, first of all, was magnificent. Sunshine, warm day, 40,000 people, cars out 3 or 4 miles on every road out from Killarney, the Cork invasion with the red and white jerseys, the banter and the crack, the southern accents, was all a melting pot in Fitzgerald Stadium. I have to say that the display by Kerry in the first half was fabulous. These were not, as somebody said to me, Hail Mary points. These were on the run, really, really fast, open football. It's going to be very hard to stop that. And obviously they're going to have a psychological advantage now over a Cork team that certainly has the capacity to win another All-Ireland. They could well end up in the All-Ireland final again. Because obviously, I think with respect to Connacht, they're not going to win it this year. Ulster are in some difficulties, and I'm not sure that the Dubs have the firepower if they come through in Leinster. So you could have a Cork Kerry All Ireland again, and that'd be some occasion in Croke Park.
Yeah. Without going political ranting, I want to turn to the Queen's visit, because one of the places she visited was Croke Park. The significance of the Queen coming to Croke Park and the whole, in actual fact, her whole visit was something very, very special. It was handled so well by everybody. But the significance, Taoiseach, of her coming to Croke Park, lots of stuff there, wasn't there?
There was. I think this actually began, first of all, when President McAleese met the Queen at Messines in Belgium a number of years ago for the opening of the Peace Tower, and they formed a relationship as two heads of state. And that relationship developed to a point where the Queen accepted the invitation to come from the Oras. But I do think, Rishi, that I was in Croke Park the night that Ireland played England in the rugby final. in the rugby match. And the silence and the absolute respect for both national anthems in Croke Park, where the English rugby team togged out, was significant of an Ireland that had evolved to a point of maturity. Now, when the Queen went back to Croke Park and was received by Uthra and Christa Rocconi and everybody else, that was symbolic of recognising, as she said in her speech, that some things might have been done very differently. But for her to walk into one of the most modern stadiums in the world, the home of an amateur organisation, the scene of an atrocious incident way back in the 20s, and her visit to Garden of Remembrance and to Island Bridge, you know, signified her signals to those who rose and rebelled and died in an Irish cause and those who fought and died in the Great War in the army of the in the British Army, fighting for king and country. So the places that she went to and the symbolism and the significance of what she did actually closed, as I said, that circle of history. She wanted to come here. She had carried out 300 state visits all over the world, but never to the Republic of Ireland. And in that sense, it was a whole new lift-off for our country. And I would thank, through Kerry Radio, the people of Ireland who responded in the magnificent way that they did, because it sent out a signal about our country, one that was carried around the world in a global sense, with hundreds of millions of people watching the significance of a reigning monarch, the first time in 100 years, coming to the Republic of Ireland and being so well and so graciously received by a country that's modern, by a people that are, who don't just talk about being the land of 100,000 welcomes, they went out and proved it.
Talking about uplifting events in the country, Rory McIlroy's win in America, and now two boxers, I know that you've spoken to them, I know you've met them, and I see you trading a few punches with one of the boxers at the Connacht final there one day. But the boxers winning gold and Rory McIlroy and other events like that, all those things, sport is a huge uplifting thing, more so in today's recessionary times, isn't it?
Yes, well, I'll be down again for the Irish Open here in Killarney, which was such a big success last year. But if you look at this, American visitors are the biggest spenders that you're going to have. McIlroy, McGrain, McDowell, Harrington, Clark, Lowry, all of these have made their mark. And, you know, we should be now campaigning, as they're going to do, for American golfers and anybody else to come to the home of champions. Because, you know, golf is about golf links, on the golf links. And links golf is what American people want to play. So from Royal Dublin, right around through Northern Ireland, Royal County down over to Ballyliffin, right down through the West Coast, and down here to the outstanding courses that you have in Kerry, from Lahinch right down through, you know, Doonbeg, and then you have the Dukes and Tralee, and you've got obviously the three in Killarney, but then you have Waterville and all the other courses. These are places where you can forge friendships, where memories are created, but also that there's a massive boost for the economy. And that's that element of sport. Look at what happened indeed with the sail training in Waterford. I opened that there last week. 500,000 people called to Waterford City that weekend. Then you have the mass movement of sport that I speak about. Young Raymond Mylott, I know him since he was a child. You think of the dedication and the discipline and the training of 4 and 5 hours a day to get to that level. Our Joe Ward, 17 years of age, light heavyweight. These are young fellas who, you know, like Rory McIlroy, set role modelships for others to follow. And whatever the discipline or whatever the sport, it's part of our Irishness that as a small nation, you can actually not just compete, not just compete and perform, but compete and win and put your name right up there in the very top of world standings. That's incredible.
We're sitting down here talking about sport again, and I'm still fascinated. Is it a big change for you to be talking sport? Do you do many programmes like this in relation now with just talking sport, forgetting about everything political? Because I often say to myself when I'd be watching you there on television, do you get tired of talking politics constantly and mics put on you and people door-stepping you? Have you done much on sport?
No, I'd like to do a lot more, obviously. You get the occasion where you do short interviews about Gaelic football or matches that Mayo might be involved in or whatever like that. But nothing as comprehensive as you are doing now. People expect you to talk about politics. And of course, the way the media have changed and communications have changed, you know, no matter where you go, whether it's a phone or a small recorder, these things are always part and parcel of daily life. The change, I suppose, is that communications are now so instant and spontaneous, and they're worldwide. You make a statement about an issue and it's gone off into the ether instantaneously. But like in our personal lives, we all have interests in sport or whatever you want to follow. And in that sense, I've always had a fascination about it. But I suppose it comes really from the conviction and the self-belief that people in sport have that they can make it to the top. I mean, I met John O'Keefe on the cycle the other day now. John had seven All-Irelands, was in the training college with me in 69. And of course, Jim Deanahan himself is an exponent of Gaelic football. And beyond that, kind of say, like, I can do this. It's about themselves and their belief and their conviction, and translate that into reality. And I suppose that's, you know, part of our own Irish personality. So whether it's throwing marbles or cricket or hurling or golf or walking or whatever, I have respect for everybody who gets up off that old couch and go out and do something. And that's the kind of people that we are and we should continue to be.
How are you finding it being Taoiseach in relation to travel and in relation to keeping up with things, and you get tired behind it all?
Well, I've been leader of the opposition for 9 years, and to take a party that was kind of demoralised after the 2002 election, which takes an awful extent of grind and travel and commitment. Yeah. Okay, so you're now in a position where you happen to be in government. I suppose the big thing that you find is that there's two or three telephone directories of reading to be done every day, and you can't do that. So you have to kind of say, what's the bottom line here? What's the synopsis? And then, of course, there's the lift in spirit that people get. It's the office that they salute, and I'm very happy to be associated with that. But it's to motivate our country as a team to say we can beat this economic challenge, and we can sort out these problems. Not easy, but they will be sorted out, and then you'll have a better country and a better opportunity for all the young people who are coming behind us. And for me as a politician, it's the same as anything else in sports. Set out your standard, make your achievements, and when it's over and done with, you can say, well, that's what we did. And my job in politics is to set out the platform so that young people coming after us won't have to go to Vancouver or Seattle or Australia if they don't want to. They'll have an opportunity here at home. And that's not an easy challenge to meet. And you won't meet it if you don't have a sense of conviction and self-belief and motivation. And that comes principally through your own personal interest in sport and what you can achieve through that.
Do you mind your diet? And are you very health conscious? You must be for a man that's doing after cycling the ring a couple of years. And are you very health conscious like that?
I'd be certainly conscious of the health position, but you don't. Regularity in the way that, you know, dietitians would say you should eat and all of the rest of it doesn't fall easily into political life. So I generally tend to eat when I have to eat or when I can eat and get on with it. But really and truly, you have to watch the extent of what you eat. You know, if you go to dinner after dinner or function after function, sure God, if you ate the whole lot, you'd blow up entirely. Then you have to say, look, I mean, put a stop to this. It's what goes in your mouth that's going to cause the problems afterwards, as much as what comes out of your mouth sometimes as well.
Who are the greatest footballers that spring to your mind that you've seen?
Well, I mean, this is always, depending on whether they play. I thought that Jack O'Shea was absolutely an outstanding footballer in his time as a midfielder. The commitment up and down the pitch was incredible. But you know, in every year you'll have two or three incidents that would stand out as being outstanding or memorable. They mightn't all be from the well-known players, but you've got a range of sublime footballers in the last 10 years who, in their own position, would leave an indelible mark on people. Whether it's high fielding, whether it's the speed of young Darren O'Sullivan yesterday going like a 100-metre man, or whether it's, you know, John Morley at centre-back and taking them all as they came. Different eras, different standards. I suppose the most spectacular thing I think I saw, which, you remember the grounds finals that they used to have?
I played in one time in 69.
In 69, yeah. Well, Mayo played Offaly in 69, I think it was, or 68, 68 or 69.
They could, actually, Kerry beat Mayo in the semi-final. Yeah, it would be 69, because 69. Kerry beat Mayo in the All-Ireland semi-final, and to be the provincial finalists would have played.
Exactly, the provincial finalists, and Mayo played Offaly. Yeah. It was a wet day, second half, a fellow playing for Offaly called the Bord Keenan.
Yeah.
People might never remember him, but he had long black hair with one of these kind of hippie styles at the time. The ball came across from the Nelly stand side and was teeming rain. And as it fell, he connected with it in a kind of a drop shot. And the ball took off like a rocket. Eugene Rooney was in goal for Mayo. And it went in at such speed into the top corner that it wrapped itself around the stanchion in the net and stayed there. It never fell. So it happened so quickly that it flew in like a rocket and the ball stuck up in the net. So it wasn't a case of hitting the net, it was actually staying up there. I can still see it in my mind's eye. But when you ask of those footballers, I mean the Dublin Kerry teams of the 70s, every year that passes, you know, there are some incidents that stay in your mind about some wonderful scores, wonderful catches, dummies or whatever else, and the way that people played. I remember when Sligo played Mayo in back in the 70s, for them to win that match and win a Connacht final, like it was like all the World Cups came together, and the place just went absolutely hilarious. No more than when Clare beat Kerry quite a number of years ago when John Mahon was training them. The excitement for new heroes and all of that is something that lasts with children for a generation.
Who's your prediction to win the All-Ireland?
I think I'm led here by Mick O'Connell's constant thing of you're never going to win unless you can put the ball over the bar. Kerry now have a psychological advantage. I think they'll be wary of some of the performances of their subs coming in yesterday. Maybe they might want to be wary of that. But if they've got Galvin and O'Shea coming back, it's going to strengthen them in defence, I would think, anyway. So they're there with a really good chance now. But I think it's going to be a Kerry-Cork All-Ireland final again, if Cork make their way through the qualifiers. And that's going to be some humdinger. And when you start them out on Croke Park, Kerry have the psychological advantage now.
Finally, Taoiseach, we'll finish up because I'm delaying you. You're the longest serving member of the Dáil. You're known as the father of the Dáil. Just turning, what are the memorable, rattle off a few memorable days or events or happenings that you enjoyed in the Dáil? Something, rattle off some big events or maybe speeches maybe set-tos or something.
I suppose the change of government is always a big event. It happened in 81, it happened in 82 again. You had three general elections there in 81, 82, 82. People were in a constant state of shock. You had the night that, Haughey sacked Lenehan after all the years of connection with each other. You had the, I remember as a student being in there the night of the arms thing when Cosgrave got the note from, I gave the note to Lynch about the carry-on that was going on and all that followed from that. You had budget days, you had people falling down, you had, speeches that were made, this, that or the other, rows breaking out. Like it's a blur in many ways until you begin to think about incidents and then the reason why they happened and who said what. Incidents of courage, incidents of people lying down in front of the wave, people forgetting about what their responsibility was, abuse of power, all these things. You know, I remember Ray Burke saying, I've drawn the line in the sand, that's it now. Then I had to resign as Minister for Foreign Affairs. You've had other resignations, you had people making their last appearances in the Dáil, Oliver Flanagan. I remember shaking hands with everybody before he left, as indeed when my own late father went up there in 75. They kept the Dáil bar open all night because everybody knew it was the last occasion. Yeah. And I suppose the collegiality, whether from whatever party, was maybe stronger then than now. But these are incidents that come through your mind. Sometime I might write them all down.
You love the cut and thrust of it, do you?
I do. It's all part of the game, Wishy, in the sense that, like, when you're in it, be in it. And when you're not in it, don't be in it. Yeah. That's my view. And I often admire, Liam Cosgrave left politics in 77, and that was it. You didn't have any further comment after that from him. And when you're in there, be in there. When you're not in there, let others do the job.
Well, I want to thank you for sitting down with me, taking the time out. Taoiseach, you're a very busy man, I know that. And I want to thank Paul Coughlin, your senator down here. Paul, a very genial man, and who set up this interview for me, never left me down for anything. You have a lot of great men down here, I can tell you. I can't be going through them all. But Paul is a gentleman in his own right.
Well, he now has the big responsibility of being whip in the Senate, however long that will last. But I'd like to say to you, as somebody from the Legion Club, who's been a foremost referee for very many years, and a foremost commentator in Gaelic games, it's a pleasure and a privilege to be on your programme. And I hope we can have the opportunity maybe to discuss other elements of sport and what it means to me as a public rep at some time in the future. So I'm glad to be here. Kerry is my second home, if you like. I'm a frequent visitor, and it's great to know a part of the outstanding tradition of what Gaelic football is here.
Thank you, Taoiseach, and listen, best of luck in your onerous task, and whatever about anything else, good health to you and your family.
Thank you, wish indeed, and God bless you.